today on Path of Grace.
But it's during that kingdom that yet another kingdom will come. And this is where it gets interesting. Verse 44, "And in the days of these kings, the toes on the statue, the iron and the clay trying to mix. In the days of these kings, raise up doth the God of the heavens a kingdom that is not destroyed to the age, and its kingdom to another people is not left. It beateth small and endeth all these kingdoms, and it standeth to the age, because that thou hast seen that out of the mountain cut hath been a stone without hands." In other words, it's not something mankind is going to do. "And it hath beaten small the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great God hath made known to the king that which is to be after this, and the dream is true, and its interpretation steadfast." In other words, Daniel is saying, this is from God, it is true, and you can count on it happening. The book of Daniel doesn't simply contain neat stories about Daniel in the lion's den and his three pals Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. It also contains specific prophecies about several world empires that would rise and fall, which as we look back historically, we discover that those empires came and went just as it was laid out in this book. So the critics say, there's no way this could have been written in advance. This prophecy could not have been made beforehand because it was too specific and these things happened just the way it was laid out. There's no way. So they came up with a theory, pretty simple one. They said this had to be written after these things happened. It wasn't written before. The author wrote all of this looking back at these empires, then made up a neat story about this guy Daniel and his buddies to go along with it, put an old date on it, and that's how it came to be. Well, I don't buy that. Who are the critics leaving out of the equation when it comes to anything prophetic? You know who they're leaving out? They're leaving out God. God is the central part of the equation when it comes to prophecy. Now, to review what we saw in our last study, in Daniel chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream that really freaked him out. He knew that the dream had some sort of significance, but he didn't know what. So he called for his wise men and astrologers, the soothsayers and the sorcerers, hoping that they could interpret the dream. But there was a problem. He couldn't remember what the dream was. So they asked him to tell them what the dream was, and they'd give him an interpretation. But he said, hey, I don't know what it was. On top of that, if I did, I wouldn't tell you. Because if I told you the dream, and then you gave me an interpretation, how would I know that that interpretation was true? How about this? You tell me the dream without me telling you what it is. And if you get that part right, I'll know that the interpretation is right. And these guys responded by saying, there's no way. No man can do this. You need to tell us the dream, and then we can tell you the interpretation. Now, King Neb got a little bit upset, to say the least, and he ordered that all of the astrologers, soothsayers, and wise men be put to death. Uh-oh. Now, that put Daniel and his friends at risk as well, because although they were Jews, remember, they had been taken captive. They were being held in Babylon, these young men who were the brightest of the bright. They were being immersed in the culture, the teaching, the philosophy, to be raised up as advisors for the king. Now, God is going to use this particular circumstance to kind of propel them forward into those positions like a rocket. Now, when they heard that the king had given the order for these men to be put to death, Daniel and his friends got together and they cried out to God for mercy. They prayed. They asked God to give them the dream and its interpretation, and God gave it to Daniel. And that's where we take up our study today. Daniel is standing before the king, declaring that no wise man, no astrologer, no magician can declare these things to the king, but there is a God who knows all things, and he alone can reveal the king's dream and its meaning. So let's get started in Daniel chapter 2, verse 26. It says this, and I'm reading from Young's Literal Translation. "The king hath answered and said to Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, art thou able to cause me to know the dream that I have seen and its interpretation? Daniel hath answered before the king and said, the secret that the king is asking, the wise men, the enchanters, the scribes, the soothsayers are not able to show to the king. But There is a God in the heavens, a revealer of secrets, and he hath made known to King Nebuchadnezzar that which is to be in the latter end of the days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head on thy bed are these. Stop right there for a minute. The first thing Daniel does is give God the credit and the glory for revealing the dream. And then Daniel tells the king that this dream has to do with things in the future, the latter end of the days. It has to do with things to come after the time of the king, all the way up to the end of the days. Verse 29. Thou, O king, thy thoughts on thy bed have come up concerning that which is to be after this, and the revealer of secrets hath caused thee to know that which is to be. In other words, as the king had been in bed, he'd been thinking about his big, powerful kingdom of Babylon and all its greatness, and he started to wonder about what would come of it. What would happen in the future? How will the world in its present state end? And as he drifted off to sleep, God gave him a dream showing what would take place after him. Verse 30, as to me, not for any wisdom that is in me above any living hath this secret been revealed to me, but for the intent that the interpretation to the king they make known, and the thoughts of thy heart thou dost know. He's saying it's not because I'm anything special that God has revealed this to me. It's just because God has decided to do it. And here's the dream. Verse 31. Thou, O king, wast looking, and lo, a certain great image. The image is mighty, and its brightness excellent. It is standing over against thee, and its appearance is terrible. This image, its head is of good gold, its breasts and its arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of brass, its legs of iron, its feet, part of them of iron and part of them of clay. Thou wast looking till that a stone hath been cut out without hands, and it hath smitten the image on its feet that are of iron and of clay, and it hath broken them small. Then broken small together have been the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold, and they have been as chaff from the summer threshing floor, and carried them away hath the wind, and no place hath been found for them. And the stone that smote the image hath become a great mountain and hath filled all the land. So that's the dream. A great big image shaped like a human being with a head of gold, chest and arms of silver, stomach and thighs of brass or bronze, legs of iron, and feet and toes that are made out of a mixture of iron, which would be strong, but also clay, which would be weak. And at the end of the dream, the feet were crushed with a stone not cut with human hands. In other words, it wasn't the work of man. It was something God was doing. And as a result, the statue collapsed into a pile of dust like chaff, and the whole thing blew away and became nothingness. All those kingdoms, those empires, become nothingness. And then the stone became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. How's that for a wild dream? And then in verse 36, Daniel gives King Neb the interpretation of it. And what we see is basically an overview of Gentile world powers from the time of Nebuchadnezzar all the way to the final kingdom on this earth. Verse 36. This is the dream and its interpretation we do tell before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings. For the God of the heavens, a kingdom, strength, and might, and glory hath given to thee. And whithersoever sons of men are dwelling, the beast of the field and the fowl of the heavens, he hath given into thy hand, and hath caused thee to rule over them all. Thou art the head of gold. Stop right there. He says, king, in this dream that God has given you, you are the head of gold. Babylon, this great empire that you rule, is a kingdom of gold. You, king, are at the pinnacle of human power. You are, from the human perspective, a force to be reckoned with. You are a king over other kings. But you know what, King Neb? You got to realize this kingdom that you treasure, this kingdom that is so dear to your heart, this kingdom that perhaps you might have tried to take credit for, this kingdom is not going to last forever. It is God who gave it to you for a purpose. It is God who placed you in this position for a season. He gave it all to you. You might think you have this power because of you. Nope, it's because of God. And just as this kingdom came, you know what? It's going to go. Verse 39. And after thee, doth rise up another kingdom lower than those. In other words, lower than yours. And in a later chapter, Daniel identifies the second kingdom as the Medo-Persian Empire. And history shows us it was the Medes and the Persians that rose up next. And he goes on, and another third kingdom of brass that doth rule over all the earth. In Daniel chapter 8, Daniel tells us that the third kingdom is the kingdom of Greece. And that's exactly what happened in history. Babylon was overthrown by the Medes and the Persians. The Medo-Persian Empire was overthrown by the Greeks. And then in verse 40, we find out that the legs of iron represent a fourth kingdom. And the fourth kingdom is strong as iron because that iron is breaking small and making feeble all things, even as iron that is breaking all these. It beateth small and breaketh. Wow. You know what empire crushed the Greek Empire? It was the Roman Empire. One historian said this about Rome. The Roman legions were noted for their ability to crush all resistance with an iron heel. And this fourth kingdom is represented by iron. That's exactly what they did. They crushed all those who opposed them. And like the two legs of the statue, the Roman Empire eventually split into two parts, the Eastern Empire and the Western Empire. Now, all of these empires have come and gone, just as this dream had shown. And then, as we make our way down to verse 41, we come to another empire in world history. And a lot of times, we've got to realize when it comes to Bible prophecy, there seems to be gaps in between those prophecies. Kind of like if you've ever gone mountain climbing or hiking, you come up on top of one mountain peak, and you can look out, and you can see way out in the distance, peak after peak after peak in front of you. You see the mountain tops, but you can't see the valleys in between those peaks. You don't know how long it will take to cross across each valley, and that's kind of the way it is with Bible prophecy. We see the peaks, but we're not always shown the valleys and how far across those valleys are, so we don't know the time frame in between certain things, and there seems to be a valley between the Roman Empire and the final Gentile world empire. Let's see what Daniel says about it in verse 41. As to that which thou hast seen, the feet and toes, part of them potter's clay, and part of them iron, in other words, clay mixed with iron, the kingdom is divided. And some of the standing of the iron is to be in it, because that thou hast seen the iron mixed with miry clay. As to the toes of the feet, part of them iron and part of them clay, some part of the kingdom is strong and some part of it is brittle. Because thou hast seen iron mixed with miry clay, they are mixing themselves with the seed of men, and they are not adhering one with another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. Wow, in other words, you could say that this last empire that he's speaking of, these toes and these feet, would be made up of smaller kingdoms mixing together, some of them strong, some of them not, but they're unable to truly adhere to one another. And going by what we see here and what we'll see later in Daniel chapter 7, it looks like this last Gentile world empire will be an alliance, some might use the word a confederation, a joining of nations, nations that come together in what might could be called a revived Roman Empire. Now, the Roman Empire ceased to exist in 476 AD, and in the West, it was followed by what people call a nation-state system, where basically the power is not centralized. There's not one individual nation that rules over the entire world. Some have tried. Instead, each nation functions individually. But the Bible speaks of one day an alliance or a group, a joining of nations, nations coming together, attempting to become one with one another. And over the past few decades, there's been a lot of movement in that direction. There are some Bible scholars who believe that what's happening with the European nations could be the beginning of the fulfillment of this in front of our eyes. Some say it has to do with the United Nations, but regardless, it seems to be a picture of many smaller powers coming together, some of them strong, some of them weak, in an attempt to create a mega superpower, which I believe, according to Scripture, will eventually be ruled over by one commonly referred to as the Antichrist. We'll talk more about that when we get to chapter 7. But it's during that kingdom that yet another kingdom will come. And this is where it gets interesting. Verse 44, and in the days of these kings, the toes on the statue, the iron and the clay trying to mix. In the days of these kings, raise up doth the God of the heavens a kingdom that is not destroyed to the age, and its kingdom to another people is not left. It beateth small and endeth all these kingdoms, and it standeth to the age, because that thou hast seen that out of the mountain cut hath been a stone without hands. In other words, it's not something mankind is going to do. And it hath beaten small the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great God hath made known to the king that which is to be after this, and the dream is true, and its interpretation steadfast. In other words, Daniel is saying, this is from God, it is true, and you can count on it happening. Verse 46. Then hath King Nebuchadnezzar fallen on his face, and to Daniel he hath given presents and sweet things he hath said to pour out to him. The king hath answered Daniel and said, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods, and a Lord of lords, and a revealer of secrets, since thou hast been able to reveal the secret. Then the king hath made Daniel great, and many great gifts he hath given to him, and hath caused him to rule over all the province of Babylon, and chief of the perfects over all the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel hath sought from the king that he might appoint over the work of the province of Babylon Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Daniel is in the gate of the king. So very, very quickly, Daniel and his three friends were thrust up into these positions as a result of Daniel giving the king the dream and the interpretation. And we see God's hand in all of it. And that's where we'll wrap up our journey through the book of Daniel today. My name is James Flanders. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you as well for your prayers and encouraging words, and for the dozen or so people who have been graciously supporting the ministry this month. Your help is deeply appreciated and very much needed. If you've never helped out at all, please pray about it. Even $5 a month would help put more food on the table for my family. Be blessed, my friend. Be blessed.